We've marched 1,000 miles. Welcome to the latest series of the Women Who Sport podcast. This series is made possible by the support of Boob Armour, who make protective inserts that fit inside a sports bra and protect breast tissue while training or competing. The inserts are lightweight, comfortable and suitable for all sporting activity. Check them out at www.boobarmour.au or through the links on the Women Who Sport social media channels. We're incredibly lucky to be working with a company that are leading the way with the protective equipment offered to female athletes, giving everyone the confidence to participate in sport. Hello and welcome to the latest series of Women Who Sport podcast. This series we're going to have big conversations with 10 groundbreaking athletes and we cannot wait to share their stories.
We want to start with a little apology for being AWOL for the last 18 months. I think we both had an absolute year of it with rugby, which we're going to get into a bit. We've both been, had a lot of crazy life changes. And I think, like, if we're honest, kind of lost a little bit of motivation for the podcast, which pains me to admit.
But no, it's true.
I don't know, we wanted to take a step back and then get that, like, proper desire to do it again, which we've both big time been feeling the last couple of months, and we're so excited to get back into it.
Exactly. Like, we started this podcast so motivated and excited to use our wee platform to share all these stories, and it actually got to a point where I think so much was going in our lives outside of the podcast that we wouldn't have been doing ourselves or the pod justice. So we feel refreshed and ready to roll.
Yeah, and I think, I don't know if you agree, Bons, like, I think during lockdown, like, there was a phase in lockdown where, like, we're just going into lockdown, everyone was, like, so motivated, finding projects, we had our podcast project, so fun, and then, like, we started coming out of lockdown, and there was other things to...
That took over. Yeah, exactly. But we are back.
And one thing that I do want to acknowledge that I know definitely affected our motivation personally, and, like, kind of just what we were doing with our lives in general, was the passing of one of our teammates, Siobhan Cattigan. Like, definitely not something that we're ready to go into detail about. Our thoughts continue to be with Siobhan's family and friends, with the rest of our team. And I think I would not, I feel like I wouldn't be being honest if I didn't mention that while we're talking about the last year and a half, and I guess why we've been taking a step back.
Yeah, couldn't have put it better myself. It definitely hit us all in different ways, but yeah, it makes you reflect, and actually I think we just needed to sort of focus on different aspects of life. But you know what, 18 months later, we're here, we're ready to go again.
Yes, kind of found that motivation to do things off the pitch and to have our little project again. So we're super excited, and huge thank you to anybody that's listened and continued to follow our Instagram, as we've posted probably about 11 times saying that we're starting the podcast again soon.
We're here.
Finally. So
to kick us off, we're sticking with our highs and lows of the week. We thought it was quite a nice way to speak about what women have been doing across the sporting world. So, Rolo, you go for it.
Okay, high of the week. So I was kind of stuck between two, but I'll say them both because more positives are better. But the Women Sports Trust report came out for 2022, which basically showed that, like, viewing numbers and everything of women's sport has absolutely rocketed. And it was just so motivating. Like, I feel like we've been grinding for so long, and it feels like we're really at, like, a massively pinnacle point in women's sport, where it's, like, just on the edge of going crazy. Like, even to see, it was like Chelsea, Arsenal. And the Chelsea Arsenal derby in London, there was like 45,000 people there at a women's football club match.
Amazing. The atmosphere, like, incredible. Was incredible.
Yeah, and as well, one thing that did get me thinking was, loads more young girls are watching sport. Like, we never watched women's sport growing up. Girls are coming to our games now and, like, growing up wanting to be part of this team. Like, it's so, like, if you see it, you can be it. And yeah, Bonner, you were at that, Matt. Like, what was it like?
Oh, incredible. And what most notable part was, it's not just young girls, it's young boys as well. It's men, women of all ages that are seeing the value and the benefit and the enjoyment out of watching a game of football, regardless of gender, really. And I think that's where
we need to push it. And I think where women's sport is so unique that it probably has got a bit more of a family feel to it, a family friendly, safe environment that potentially the men's matches are going. And yeah, it was an amazing atmosphere, amazing day to be part of.
So cool. And the other one that I wanted to squeeze in was the RFU maternity policy. I thought that was so cool to see. I don't know if I've just stolen your one there. The RFU and their what they've done for the Red Roses, I think they're world leading in so many ways. And actually that maternity policy is one.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah, that one was definitely mine as well. And I think especially as I'm sort of getting to that age, not that age, but like I'm 29. hopefully the next 5 to 6 years or whatever, I'll be having my own family. And things like that, you don't necessarily think about when you're 18, 19, 20, even mid-20s. But actually to have that policy in place means that females that are operating in that world-class international environment can have babies and have the security that actually they can still come back and have that support and have an international career afterwards. Because you see so many of the men, I'm speaking rugby in particular here, just because it's what we follow, but a lot of them have their kids there after the match and they'll refer back to it in post-match interviews saying, oh, it's so nice that I've had Jimmy and Bob here watching. And it'll be nice to see more and more women do that because there's very few mothers in the game right now.
Niall Williams, for example, is a mother in the game. Rennie Whitcliffe, they're both examples from New Zealand, but they're players that have been playing absolutely incredibly, and that's post having a baby. So it's, yeah, so cool to see that that is a pathway for women.
Yeah, definitely. No, great one. What about low?
Lows. Okay. So I don't know if this counts as low. I'm kind of twisting it, but the Welsh Rugby Union chatting about striking the game against England because they don't know if they have contracts in 3 months. Honestly, makes me laugh out loud because as a women's athlete, you don't know ever if you have a contract in 3 months. Like, I don't know how many points in our career we haven't known that information. Like, obviously, that's something that is massively getting better. But, like, right now, I don't know if I've got a contract in 3 months. But it's, like, for me, that's normal.
Yeah.
Because it's always been that way.
No, I know, exactly.
Actually, before it was knowing that I absolutely didn't have a contract.
And we played for the absolute love of the game to represent our country. Yeah.
Like, I'm not saying that that's acceptable at all. And I think it's really cool that the players are, like, standing up for what they believe in and, like, fighting for better rights and stuff. But, yes, interesting one.
Yeah, no, that is very interesting. And it makes you just reflect and think about, oh, okay, how much further we need to go as well.
Yeah. And I could strike, but nobody would notice. So I suppose I won't.
Oh, well, Milo was the, I don't know how I feel about this one, the Tiger Woods tampon joke. You heard about this?
Oh, no.
So at a competition, he hands his like competitor, friendly banter, a tampon to basically be like, you hit like a girl, like I smashed you sort of thing. And it was caught on camera. Now, it was done subtly and I can see the humour in it, right? I can see that it's quite funny. However, at this day and age, when you are looked upon and idolised by so many youngsters growing up in particular, to see that sort of humour, to insult the female gender, I'm just like, oh, come on, you could have played that bit better.
I have so many questions. Like, why is he carrying around a tampon? Yeah. Or did he like plan this pre-tournament? Was it like, if I smash him, I will?
Good question. I don't actually know. I need to read more on the story, but I've seen it a little bit on my social feed and I thought, oh, controversial to say the least.
Oh, yeah. Very bizarre.
Yeah, bizarre. Okay, then. Bagpipes.
Getting into it with the first episode now, and actually we're just doing it me and Bond, so we've always felt like we couldn't do this, but actually I think we've both had a lot of cool things going on and we almost had to like gas each other up to feel like we could do this, which is kind of silly.
No, exactly. Yeah, I think we're a bit too modest and humble, but we've got some stories that I think people want to hear, so here we go.
And if it's just our mums listening, enjoy.
Exactly. So we're going to start with the past 18 months we've had with Scotland, we went to World Cup qualifiers, got ourselves qualified for the World Cup, went to the first World Cup Scotland's been involved in 12 years. And despite not having the results that we wanted, we were so flipping close in two games. And I think we proved that Scotland deserves to be on the world stage and playing against the best. And it was an absolute roller coaster of a time with emotions. But, you know, I wouldn't want to have done it with any other group of people. I've got the most amazing memories and experiences from that whole 18 months and the World Cup itself. Like, what better place to be in New Zealand, the nation that absolutely adores rugby?
Oh, absolutely. And the drama that Scotland had of getting to a World Cup. So for us, qualifiers were meant to be in COVID. Then the World Cup gets moved. Our qualifiers have been cancelled, but we don't know when to. That was also after I personally started the pandemic, so I cannot complain about that.
But literally, actually, Rona was
started.
Yeah, that was Italy, Six started. Nations. Rona comes back and is pretty much like the first 1 in 10 people in Scotland to have COVID, and she gets basically escorted to.
It was like Breaking Bad, ambulances, hazmat suits, people in yellow costumes, taking me in an ambulance to the hospital in Glasgow. I was in the back of the ambulance, got a notification on my phone from like BBC Sports Scotland saying Scotland women's player test positive for coronavirus. Hello. it was all just an absolute time. And actually, I think that was the start of, things going absolutely crazy for us. So it was World Cup qualifiers cancelled. Then we eventually, I think it was September of that year.
Yeah.
We got to, or no, it would have been a whole year later.
So oh, yeah, a whole year later.
It wasn't until September 2021 that we got to do our European qualifiers. And anybody that listens that knows women's rugby, getting to the World Cup from Europe is so hard because there's so many extremely strong teams in Europe. And as well, this World Cup was specifically hard because a lot of teams had pre-qualified from the last World Cup.
Yes.
So we had a tournament against Spain and Ireland. Italy. Italy finished first, they went through. It was basically who came second, got to go to the World Repechage. We had a game that we scored a try in the very, very, very final dying seconds of the game against Ireland to qualify. And
but yeah, wasn't first, even that. We drew with that try. It was Slaw's kick.
It was a kick. Oh, Sarah Law, I didn't give her justice there.
Yeah, no, in Slaw we trust. It was Sarah Law's kick in the 81st minute that she slotted with nerves of steel to literally pip Ireland to the post for us to advance through to the final round of qualification.
Yeah, and I think that was being part of that journey. Like, we were the bottom ranked team at that tournament. I think that was something that genuinely not many people outside of that room and out of that 28-man squad believed that we could do.
Yeah, the belief within the build-up to that campaign was something that I never really truly experienced in a Scotland team before, and we just believe we could do it. It was our time. I even get shivers now down my arms thinking about it, but yeah, that game was remarkable. But little did we know what was to come.
Dubai. Next up, we all get shipped to Dubai to play against Colombia in winner takes all match to go to the World Cup.
And in the run-up to this, the December prior, so we had the final qualification in February, December, ruptured meniscus, have an operation. So it's like, crumbs. I don't know if I'm going to get back in time. However, we get the rehab, I get the green light to get on the plane to go to Dubai. Get to Dubai! I get COVID! So if it's not Rona getting COVID, it's me getting COVID. I then spend the next 10 days in my hotel room.
To set the scene, me and Bonner were roomies. So I just had COVID at Christmas, classic, second time. So we know I'm not getting COVID in Dubai. Already had it. And Bonner's were roomies. So we're kind of matching up like people who had just had COVID recently with people who hadn't, trying to keep more of the squad safe. Lots of planning, lots of behind the scenes. And Bonner.
Also, can we just say, I had, through the whole pandemic, this has been 2 years of pandemic, I had not COVID once. Well, tested anyway. So this is the setting scene even more.
Yeah, Bonner's worked her arse off to get back for this tournament. It's still touch and go. We still don't quite know like how many minutes she'll be able to play in the game, blah, blah, blah. But we're at day one of 12 days in Dubai, and Potter's on a podcast and her phone lights up just after we've done COVID testing, a couple hours later, and it's a doctor. We all know what this means. But Potter's on the podcast, so I answer the phone. And the doctor says to me, okay, Rona, you're going to have to leave the room because unfortunately Potter is tested positive for coronavirus. So I literally look Potter in the eyes, put my hand to my mouth, and I'm like, oh my gosh. So I'd say you went through like a denial phase, Bonner, where Bonner was trying to convince me, herself, everybody that it was a false positive.
It's not right.
No.
They've got it wrong.
She starts whipping out the lateral flows one after the other. I just remember you like, do you see a line? Do you see a line?
Honestly, and then it hit, and then I was just hysterical.
Yeah.
Oh.
And you were absolutely hysterical while I had to pack up my things and leave. Yeah. So I literally left Bonner, like, crying in a heap in the room about her syndesmosis, about having COVID. And I was like, yeah, I got to go.
I've got to go. I'm so sorry, pal. Oh, geez. We can laugh about it now.
We can. We were then as a squad, there was outside people who had not been in contact with anybody infected. Those people, they still had to isolate, but they got some outside time. Then there was us inside people. We were in Dubai for 12 days. I was seven of them in a hotel room. And this is hotel room on the like 300th floor. Like, there is no way out. Bonner, you were how many days in? You must have been longer.
10
of 12 days in Dubai.
I love hotels. And the little boxes, packed lunch boxes that we got three times a day. We got a lot of melon.
A lot of melon. But beggars can't be choosers. There's no menu.
No. So we fast forward. We get through the absolute palaver. Get to game day. Now, thankfully, I'm allowed out. I can run water, which, you know, is the next best thing. And we go and beat Colombia. We qualify Scotland for the World Cup, the first World Cup in 12 years, and it is incredible. It's just absolute elation.
Like, I remember in one of my first caps for Scotland, the captain at the time, Lisa Martin, saying, like, to leave your shirt in a better place. And I think that's something that I think when I look back on my career, which is it's continuing, I hope, for a little while. But I think knowing that we got Scotland to their first World Cup in such a long time, like, I think that's, we all took the Scotland shirt to a better place that day, and just so proud to be part of that journey.
Yeah, definitely incredible. Yeah, honestly so good. And then what happened after that is, as a squad, we got to train full time together in the run-up to World Cup, which we haven't had that extended time together before, which was amazing. And the sevens girls, you guys went off to the Commonwealth Games. It was a massive year for Scottish rugby.
Yeah, it was, absolutely. And I think the World Cup was incredible, like, to have the crowd that they did at Eden Park for the final game, like, the absolute nail biter that game was. It was incredible and such a good advert for women's rugby. Like, it was so inspiring. And actually, since the start of that journey we were talking about with COVID gate, and now Scotland women have gone professional, Ireland women have, Wales women have, Italy women have, like, the changes that we have seen in the game have been incredible. Like, I don't know about you, Bonds, but I definitely didn't think that professionalisation was going to happen in my time of playing rugby, and it's like we've blinked and it has.
Oh, massively. Yeah, I certainly did not think it would be in my career, but already I think even next year the funding and the support will be even better. It is moving at a rate of knots, and I think women's football in particular has got like a lot, we've got a lot to thank for, because I think they're leading the way, women's cricket as well. The RFU and what they're doing with the Red Roses, it's really, really good to see all of our unions getting behind us and seeing the benefits and the importance of the women's game.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I think the success of the Lionesses has massively changed, like, people's perception of women's sport in the country. And it's so cool that actually as rugby players, we can still feel the benefit of that from another sport in another country as Scottish rugby players. Like, it's incredible.
Definitely.
Cool. So now we're going to get into a little bit of what Bonner has been up to. So, Bonner, you are now a fully qualified RAF officer.
Yes. So again, this time 18 months ago, I had confirmed my place at Royal Air Force Cranwell to undergo my 6-month training. And again, that was an absolute roller coaster of a ride. I went in kind of in the midst of COVID, so spent the first few months getting locked into base, which usually after the first month or so, you get a weekend at home, or when the course starts becoming a bit more leadership and academic based, you get a little reward going home at weekends and things. So did struggle get locked in for 3 months, but actually the friends you make on course and the guys and the girls that were in my flight really become your family, and they get you through, and they get you through the extremely long days, extremely long nights, and the skills that I've learned and been able to develop personally and professionally like are amazing. And I'm so grateful to have had that opportunity and to call myself a Royal Air Force officer. It was awesome.
Yeah, and actually I didn't even think about the, I guess everybody will imagine or have fond feelings for the flight that they came through with, but never mind when you've literally not been able to go home for 3 months.
They just literally become your family. They see you at your absolute worst. When you need to cry, you got to go and cry to somebody. But they're there for also the highs when you finally master a skill or you do good on a leadership task. And you're giving these people feedback and they're giving you feedback. And sometimes feedback can be a tricky thing. We both know coming from the sports world, but actually to be able to feed back to each other so openly and honestly and then go and have a drink with them at the end of the day, or then know that you've got their shoulder to cry on sort of thing, actually is just really special and something unique about the forces.
Yeah, so cool, pal. And I know that for you, it was going and making the decision to do that was a step back from rugby, and you were making that decision at a time where women's rugby wasn't professional. But I think although it wasn't professional before, it wasn't that we didn't treat it like we were professional. Like we, a lot of us dedicate a lot of time to rugby, and I know that you had to take a step back to do that. So I guess how hard was that decision for you at the time, and having made that decision and being out the other side, how do you reflect on it now?
Yeah, tough. I remember having countless conversations with yourself, with my dad, with anyone that would listen, most of them in tears or ending in tears, just because I really struggled with the concept of taking a step back from rugby. I've been in a sporting environment for most of my childhood, all my adulthood life so far, and to spend 6 months not on a training program, not playing a game or something to look forward to, I really struggled. But actually the longer I was playing rugby, the more I thought, if I pick up an injury, I could potentially fail my medical and then that door will be closed to military life. That was one thing that was weighing on my mind. The second was COVID was starting to hit, and at this point I hadn't got my offer through yet. And when COVID hit, I think a lot of people had the time to reflect on actually stop for one and reflect on what they wanted from life, what they were doing, where, and an opportunity to almost like redirect where they were going. And I think for me, I thought, you know what? Rugby at the time wasn't professional. I still think, even though rugby is getting professional, the importance of a dual career is huge. I think we're only one injury away from never playing again. Touch wood, we end on our own terms. But actually to have something to fall back on and that's going to support you and actually mentally be a stimulus and you, something you can get stuck into is so important. So regardless of professionalisation, I would always recommend someone to have a backup plan and something, qualifications, whether you're going into the military or degree or whatever it may be, have something else in the back burners. And yeah, I thought at the time I'd be able to balance both my career, but thankfully the Air Force have supported me and are granted me elite athlete status, where I just train full time at the minute representing the Air Force along the way. And that I know that I've got a fantastic police career to get stuck into when my boots are hung up.
And with that, how does the balance work for you now between being on shift at the RAF and playing with Quinns, playing with Scotland?
So at the minute, the Royal Air Force have something called an elite athlete scheme. So if you're competing, representing your country at international level, then you can be considered for this. And it essentially allows athletes like myself, Amy Cocaine, Karis Williams, you've got Josh McNally plays at Bath, and we're all rugby players on it, and they fully support us to go and train and play full time to basically see how far we can go, be the best we can be. It means that we're non-deployable, so it'll be a yearly sort of annual contract, and then it'll get reviewed, and if you're still competing and there's that mutual agreement with your union or your representative country, then you can stay on it and reapply. And then it just means that when I'm in my off season, I can spend time at bases around the country, upskilling myself, keeping in with the branch, and my base are really supportive. I can nip into the office and sit in meetings if I want to, or go and see my boss down the road, and they're really supportive in keeping us upskilled and just in with the profession. So yeah, I honestly could not recommend it anymore. The forces is a really great career.
I think what's amazing is the pathway that the RAN offer for women's rugby players. Like, as you said, you guys are able to have that dual career and they're so supportive of it. And as well, like, the Army-Navy game between the women is hugely competitive.
Yeah. No, we've got inter-services coming up as well. And the passion and just the desire for women that are potentially on deployment to come back and represent either of their services is just something quite special. Amy and I were actually speaking about it this week, and Army, Air Force, Navy, all three have got competitive teams, and no team will be the same just because of the nature of our work and deployments and things like that. But the history behind the games is something really special to be a part of. So it is something that you just feel like you're part of a bigger picture, and it is, yeah, a really cool thing.
And I guess it must be one, like, we always have so much respect for our competitors, but it doesn't matter if people are Navy or Army, you know that they've gone through a similar training process to you guys, and you just have that military bond between everybody.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. And when you have, so you've got your inter-services, and then you've got something called UK Armed Forces, so they'll then select teams from the across the three, and just the way that folk gel really in that. Like, I haven't been a part of a UCAF squad yet, but from mates that have, they say it's just an incredible experience, and I think it just goes to show that, I guess, it's just a like-mindedness, isn't it? You're generally in for similar reasons, and you've got similar attributes, so you make it work and you bond. And it kind of goes back to the sort of, we'll come on to this with Babas, but why Babas play it, the inter-service sport, especially rugby, is you work hard, you play hard, you have each other's back, and then you go and celebrate with pint afterwards. This almost goes back to the true values of rugby and why rugby started, and I think that's what makes it special as well.
Funny you mentioned Babas. Like, I think with the UCAF and with the RAF squad, like, one thing that made Babas super special was just knowing that combination of people will never be in that room again, and that was something that you just get so incredibly close in such a short space of time. And like, when I see those people, it's like we've known each other for years and like been long-standing friends. Yeah, like, it's crazy.
Yeah, no, it's class. It kind of brings me on to talk about your journey in the past 18 months. You had that Babas call-up, which was incredible, and you can definitely see from your social media that there was that bond. And even Len Dog coming up to Scotland the other weekend, and you'd met her for six, seven days through Babas, yet it was like you'd known each other for years. It seems to be like a really special environment to be part of.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Like, Len Dog is Lenny Corson, who is our French pal who's playing at Harlequins now. But that was actually another way that the rugby world was so cool. Like, athlete Babas with Lenny, who's now at Harlequins with Bonner, and like, we all spent the weekend together in Edinburgh. Like, it's just so amazing how sport has the power to bring people together like that.
Definitely, it is full of a lot of highs, but also a lot of lows. So I guess if we rewind to a few summers ago, you were busting a gut trying to get into the Olympic squad. Now this for me was like a huge reason why I thought this was a great episode for us to talk about, because You had a big setback and you didn't quite make the Olympic squad. Now that for anyone that has dedicated so long to train and put themselves in the best place and then have that failure, but to be so resilient and come back from it. And Jesus, the stuff you've ticked off since then is remarkable. Like, I'm so, so proud of you. But how did you overcome that? Like, what was your initial feelings? Talk to me.
Yeah, it was a bit of a crazy one. So it was summer of 2021. So I got selected for the GB squad. Then within like 3 weeks, tore my hip flexor. So I had a grade 2 in my hip flexor, which I am so sure I did from overtraining. Like, it's one that the physios are like, you can't know. And I don't know, that was, so it was like the high of getting a contract, being involved in GB sevens, going into that environment. That was when it was still England of the World Series. That has changed now, and we'll get into that. But it was very much, there's a squad that have been together for 4 years training for the Olympics, and a couple of Scots and a couple of Welsh that come into that and have 3 months to fight and get themselves into that squad. And as well, I just tore my hip flexor. So that whole time was an absolute roller coaster. Like, you're trying to make connections with people, but you can't train. And 8 weeks later, I came back from a hip flexor and actually was at like a really good place in training. Like, felt like I was going really well and felt like I was playing some really good sevens. But ultimately, 13 people get named in the squad and two of us got told we were traveling reserves non-traveling reserves. Being a traveling reserve would have been a lot more fun. Non-traveling reserves, and I was one of those people. And it was so, since watching the Olympics in 2016, like every single time somebody said like make a wish, if that was like you were blown out a birthday candle or something, I would always wish to go to the Olympics. That, I don't know, like the Olympics is like just gets put on this hugely pedestal, and I absolutely put it there. And yeah, like I remember, it's so funny to think about now, because I remember like in the weeks after the Olympics that, like, I remember thinking like, I don't think I'll ever feel accomplished in what I've achieved in sport without having
gone to Olympics,
like, having done this thing. Yeah, yeah, without having gone to the Olympics and really feeling like like I don't know if I'm ever going to be like truly happy again, and like believing that at the time. And that is just so, yeah, but I don't know, like just so ridiculous to think of now. Yeah, like it was just, yeah, the weeks after that were crazy. And as well, something else that surprised me was actually me getting told I wasn't going wasn't the hardest part. It was like, as a squad, our goal was to medal at the Olympics. And I remember thinking like, if I do absolutely everything I can to help the squad medal, then like it's up to the coach. If I'm in or not in the squad, it's the right decision for the team. And I've contributed to that journey. And actually it was that bronze medal match between GB and Fiji. Like, we just missed out on that bronze medal, and actually that was the hardest bit. So it was like, okay, I've not been selected, the squad hasn't achieved his goals. It was always like, what was this for?
Really? I didn't know that. I never actually asked you how you felt watching that bronze medal match.
Oh, it was hard. I didn't watch any other like, I love the Olympics. I didn't watch any of it apart from the skateboarding, because I didn't mind those 9-year-olds.
Yeah, literally sky tearing up.
Yeah, you guys go for it. But no, yeah, it was just like such a crazy time. And actually off the back of that, I decided to sign a deal with La Leona team in Bordeaux, France, not speaking any French, and kind of just being like, I want a change and a new opportunity. And within a couple months with this new team, like being in a brand new place, it was like, rugby-wise, was probably the happiest I've ever been. Like the team were class, they were so supportive, and people just played with just so much pride for their club. And it was like elite rugby, but it kind of had that community feel in terms of,
yeah,
we had a clubhouse and we did loads of stuff for the kids, and everybody's parents would come to the games, and like that having a beer after training, like the little things, like really reminded me why I started playing rugby in the first place, which I think is exactly what I needed at that time.
Oh, definitely. I think that move for you is probably one of the best things you could have done, like to have gone through everything that you'd been through, an Olympics, which you have put on that pedestal since you're a child, I'd imagine, to fall so short but so close, and then actually going away to France, speaking a new language, meeting a new family, totally embracing their culture. You just seemed you again. It was so good to see.
It was like so cool just how quickly like I felt like better about life and everything. And yeah, like sport is just so, so powerful in that way.
Yeah, but I think also going back to the Olympics, it's testament to you. I don't think you would see or hear many athletes saying that the hardest part of missing out on selection was then seeing your team lose in the bronze medal match, like that for you to be so tough. I honestly think there are so many athletes out there that would be selfish enough to be like, actually, it probably took the edge off. It's brutal to say.
Yeah.
I feel like that probably would be the case, but you honestly put your heart and soul into it, regardless of whether you're there or not. You just want what's best for people. And like, hats off.
I appreciate that, pal. And definitely like with this time round, so I'm now in a situation that I'm back with the GB squad. It's now Great Britain on the World Series. So that created an opportunity to have a contract with Sevens. Trying to not let the Olympics define what this program's about, because it's about like inspiring the next generation, getting more girls into rugby, getting more young boys into rugby. It's like, it's got to be about more than that pinnacle event, because like, you don't know what's around the corner.
Yeah, no, so true. So fast forward, you're in Bordeaux, loving life again. In terms of actual rugby, was it a new kind of game? Was it a new style? Did it help your performance?
So played in France. Let me tell you, the skinny winger, they beat the shit out of each other. Like, the game is so physical there. And even, like, I don't know, if I'm training in the UK, there'd be, like, contact block at the end. You'd be like, oh, like, got 15 minutes of contact now. Okay. You'd show up, they'd be like, okay, warm up, we're doing contact. Everybody's doing their little, like,
yeah,
shrugging their shoulders, like, doing their Macarena, slapping their face, okay, ready for contact. And people would, like, end each other at training. Then this, like, jump back up and jump back in the line. Like, nothing happened. Whereas I feel like if we ended each other at training, we'd be like,
contact dick.
Yeah, like, what are you doing? Whereas they'd honestly just beat each other up, and as well, they'd be licking their lips at me being there, like, skinny little winger. Actually, I think everything I wanted to work on in my game, like physicality, that breakdown work, I was massively exposed to there during games, but also at training. Like, no, it was brilliant. And for anybody that wants to play abroad, like, I could not recommend it enough. Like, just being the person that can't speak the language is so, so hard. And I think it's something that as an English speaker, we do not
appreciate. Yeah. Now, you're still contracted to Bordeaux despite being in the Sevens, right? How does that work?
Yeah, like, super lucky that the club have continued to support me, because it hasn't been ideal. Like, I got a contract with GB in October and, classic, got a thumb operation. Gets contract with the GB, gets injured, little thing I'm doing. So yeah, then also couldn't play for club because of my thumb operation, couldn't play for GB, and got back for one game. But now actually I'm really fortunate that I'm in a situation going to Vancouver Sevens. It's kind of one that's still evolving. Like, the GB program is very new, and in terms of our relationships between club and the program here, it's almost like figuring out as we've gone along, because this is the first year that it's happened. So yeah, I'm hoping I can catch some games later in the season, but really lucky to still have the support of that club, and really hope that in the future, like, I definitely see myself going back there and doing a season out there if that opportunity comes up again. So yeah, we'll see.
Yeah, definitely. So you took the GB contract. How did that come about? So you had to choose 15s or 7s. Talk us through it.
Oh, I had to choose between them both. Had about 48 hours to do it, it felt like. But no, I think the hardest part of it all was, like, since I was like 16, my goal has been playing for Scotland, doing everything I can for Scotland. Got to play in the World Series a little bit. That's the 7 series with Scotland. And it was never a dream of playing for GB, because that didn't exist. Like, it wasn't something that happened. It was only in September last year that it was decided it would be GB. And, like, felt a lot of guilt about the decision almost. But I think I'd seen it as wanting to have another crack at that Olympic cycle. And again, as we go through this process, it's like, GB haven't won a medal in the World Series yet. There's the opportunity to do that, and the opportunity to, I definitely want to inspire more girls in Scotland, and for them to see that there's a place for them on that world stage. And this time it's not coming in with 3 months to go and having to prove yourself. It's actually being part of like a longer term process and building a brand new team. So yeah, I guess that was kind of why I went for it. Like, I always dreamed of playing on the World Series with Scotland, and that was no longer a possibility, but it now was with GB. And I felt like I wouldn't be like doing justice to my dreams as a teenager if I didn't
give
that a go. Yeah, absolutely. And definitely like the 2025 Rugby World Cup, I absolutely want to be there with Scotland and doing everything I can to make that happen down the line. So it isn't closing that door in Scotland forever, but I guess kind of changing priorities for the next little while. But I'm so lucky that like everybody has been so supportive with that from the Scotland family. As in, like, I guess I knew everybody would be like, that definitely made it a lot easier.
Amazing. So before we wrap it up, in terms of your sevens, what have we got for the rest of the season? What are your goals? What are you wanting to get out of it?
So we've got, I think by the time this episode comes out, actually, I should have been to Vancouver. So yeah, hopefully that one's gone okay. And then there'll be, for the squad, there's Hong Kong sevens, Toulouse sevens, and then it's into Olympic qualifiers in the summer. So that's, yeah, again, qualifying from Europe, which is really tough. There's Ireland, there's Spain, there's Poland, there's a couple of good teams in there.
Yeah.
I've definitely helped by France not being part of that qualification process with it being a Paris 2024 Olympics.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, I guess that's a big one for summer, getting GB to the Olympics, and massive opportunity coming up, and just so privileged to be part of it.
Amazing. Look at us go.
I know.
And also a new Women in Sport series that we're excited to get stuck into.
Yes, absolutely. And yeah, like, the biggest thank you to anybody that has stuck with us on this journey. And I guess hopefully that's a little bit of an insight into where we disappeared to.
Definitely. All right then, to keep it in line, we're finishing off with a this or that.
Cool. So we're going to be asking all our guests these 5 quickfire questions. Before, we actually did quickfire questions, but they were taking too long.
Yeah, they were.
So now we've got options for people. It should be quicker.
Yeah. We're trialing it. Time.
So, Bonner, tea or coffee?
Coffee.
I agree. Android or iPhone?
Oh, iPhone now.
But Bonner was an Android kid for a long, long time.
I'm still adjusting to iPhone life. Honestly, I didn't know you could double tap to get your wallet up. I would open my phone up, press the wallet, then do the double tap, and then pay. Didn't realize double tap.
And it's, you know, Android kids, it's when they want you to send them a photo.
This was
not made on AirDrop. Oh, you're airdropping the whole bus. Everybody's getting their photos. And then there's a little Android kid that raises their hand.
Who's me, WhatsApp?
Somebody WhatsApp me.
Okay, next. Conditioning or weights?
Weights, easy. And I know that you're going to be conditioning.
Yes! The rower in me.
Specifically upper body.
Yeah. Gun club. Okay, night out or night in?
I'd love to be a night in person, but I know that in my heart, I'm a night out person.
Yeah, I think I'm getting to the age where I could be night in, but actually, can't be just a pub trip with the gals. You're just sitting at a pub, live music, drinks flowing, conversation flowing, like, that is the best night.
Agreed. And then you're in bed, back at 12, 8 hours sleep.
Boom, no problem. Go again.
Yeah. And final question under this or that, Libra or Aquarius?
Aquarius.
Libra. So that's basically just asking our guests who they preferred.
Exactly, but little do they know until they probably answered, so.
Amazing. Well, cannot wait to get on with the series, and just want to say another massive thank you to our sponsor, Boob Armour. They've supported us now for, is this our third season with Boob Armour?
Yeah, third season.
Yeah, honestly, check them out. I think all the time we're like sending each other videos being like, listening to Boob Armour.
Yeah, for sure. Thank you very much, guys.
Thank you, Sharon. Always be proud of who you are, girl. Gotta hold your head up high. Don't let this moment pass you by. You can be anything you believe you can be, girl. This world is waiting just for you. So go and shine and live the truth. You can be anything you believe you can be.